throwing it back to the mid-2000s with this one today. Mitch King joins the show. Obviously, one of the best Hawkeye D-linemen in the Ferentz era. But we get to learn a little bit more about what Mitch does now in the business world. Talk memories in the black and gold. Memories from the NFL. All the way back in Hillcrest. And a lot more. Lots of good pieces in here about mindset and how to be successful in life. Let's have a day. Let's go. Another episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. We have a guest. We've tracked down somebody else so that you guys don't have to listen to just our voices. It is the actual Wash Up Walk-Ons, not just the friendship podcast tonight. Our guest is a former first team All Big Ten, first team, second team, third team All American, depending on which publication you ask back then. And one of the guys that when we were coming up, this guy played in, we were in middle school. I thought was one of the toughest sons of bitches that I'd ever seen on the football field. It's Mitch King joining the show tonight. Mitch, we're happy to have you.
Yeah, I've been watching from afar, guys. Thanks for the invite.
Dude, so excited to have you on. Excited to learn a little bit more about you. Excited to be repping the Mitch King agency on the show.
I know you are. I appreciate it. So I don't know how that came out. Oh, that's right. I cold emailed you too, didn't I?
You did. You did. You're like, yo, I listened to the show a little bit. I'd love to maybe throw some ads around on the podcast. And I was like, hey, yeah, shoot you to my guys. Guy sent me back. He's like, hey, put a read together for Mitch. Now we're rolling. Now Mitch King can be heard all over the Wash Up Walk-Ons.
There you go. No, I that's a different world for me from what I was doing and shaking and moving like that. But no, it works.
Tell me about it. What's so you're slinging insurance now. Is that's the adult job that you're –
So when I got done playing football, I invested in real estate. So I owned and operated, I still own, a property management company. So we owned a portion, but we managed about 2,600 rental units and HOA units in the corridor.
Whoa, 2,600.
So we had, my wife and I, we had about 40 employees. We still have about 40 employees. I just do nothing of the day to day. She was running it and, I stepped out of the day to day in January of 23. So I was like, hey, I'm kind of just a people person. I don't really do much of the day to day. What the hell is going to move my needle? So, I believe anyways, long story short, without talking all about me, but I believe in
the podcast is about you. You can talk as much about
the property management gave me the foundation to do, you know, a maintenance company, a cleaning company, a pest control company, now an insurance company. And I can run parallel with helping some of my clients that we do property management for, but also some of the people that I've met throughout the years. So it was a good transition, allows a lot of freedom so that I can bounce between companies.
So so all the ones you just mentioned, you've kind of got your hand in all of that.
Yeah.
Wow. And then they all the businesses, you know, you can hire each other for all the different stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of the concept of it, right? So real estate got me into it. So, and then early in the years I was doing it, I was like, why am I hiring a cleaning company when I can, you know, all that money walks out the door when I could have it inside? Why am I hiring a maintenance crew when I can have that money in-house? You know, like it just started making sense to vertically integrate. So
it's funny, Grant and I were just having that conversation when you jumped into the call about stuff we're doing over here. That's awesome, man. You strike me as the guy then that you didn't want to just relax. You know, you got, I heard real estate makes people rich. So like rich guy Mitch didn't want to just sit down, go to the Bahamas, live half time in Mexico, half time in Iowa and just chill. You just want to run all the companies.
That's no. I was actually just having a conversation at a dinner that I was at a minute ago. I don't think I could sit idle. I'd end up divorced, a drunk, probably something not good. I'm in a happy marriage. I don't even drink that much. So, but something would go wrong. If I just sat around and did nothing, something would go wrong.
Do you have kids?
I do. I have two little boys.
I mean, I got a little girl. I know that keeps you busy.
How old is your daughter?
She's only 18 months old.
Dude, the boys and girls are like polar opposites. It is absolute bonkers. My best friend has two girls, yeah, and they come over, and my boys are swinging from chandeliers and chewing holes in the drywall, and these girls are sitting there for 3 hours coloring. And I'm like, what?
Now, are you sure that is a gender difference, or is that just a Mitch King genetic difference?
That my wife says that same thing, but I guarantee it's gender. I thought I was going to be cursed with little girls, you know, but no, I'm absolutely cursed with little boys. They're just
little girl so far is awesome, man.
Yeah, I bet
it's. I'm sure the little boys are too. But I've heard of that. Yeah. It's a little different. I mean, you had two of you, and so you had to know what you were getting into there.
I never thought I know I'm an aggressive individual. Like when push comes to shove, I'm pretty aggressive. But these little boys are at a different level. From 6:45 in the morning, they're punching, they're throwing, they're gritting their teeth, they're wrestling. They're getting, you know, I put them up in spring? I was Alex Canellis runs a little youth wrestling program at Big Game, and we put the boys in there. And every time they come home, now they're in wrestling stances and they're wrestling and they're pinning each other.
Playing D line against whatever will line up across from them.
Oh yeah.
Are you remodeling the house to just give them an area where they can just go crazy? Because my parents did that. Like we had an unfinished basement growing up, and it's like this is just going to be where they destroy the house.
Wreck shit.
They're just not going to care. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. So my wife and I, right during COVID, bought a house and we put an addition on the house. But downstairs, the gentleman that I bought the house from, he had a wood shop. And it was probably 19 and a half feet by 32 feet long. Ooh. And now it's we finished it out and now it's just a wrestling room. So we have a large wrestling mat in there. We've got bean bags. We've got a jungle gym. It's just we shut the door and the chaos is in there.
And just, hey, yeah, come back when it's time to go to sleep. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Don't come in unless you're bleeding or something's broke.
Yeah. Unless someone's dying.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. That's all. Did you wrestle?
I didn't. I swam.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the first twist of the podcast here. Right? Tell me about that.
My mom said, listen, if you wrestle, you're disowned. You're on your own. So, yeah. So my sister, my brother and I were all, state qualifiers, swimmers in high school. I gave it up when I tore my shoulder my junior year, and that was my last year swimming was junior year.
Interesting. So I don't know.
Why was mama not a fan of wrestling?
My mom's weak. Who knows?
Who knows? That's going to be an awesome clip.
Yeah. She can't. I mean, she can't even watch my nephews pitch a 13U baseball game.
She didn't want to have to deal with what you got going on down in the wrestling room now.
Correct. Yeah.
That's funny. So I don't know how much you know or listened to the show. We did have another guy, Drake Kulik. I don't know if you've ever met him. He's from Eastern Iowa. He's from Muscatine. So that says a lot about him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's sort of like, he just double that. And that's Drake. he kind of stepped away because he got a little frustrated with some stuff last season, but he was like big, tough guy, meathead, but also swam in high school.
Did he really? Okay.
He was on the, I'm going to butcher it. Relay. His team was the state champs in a sprint relay distance.
Yeah, like a sprint medley. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And he was the freestyle guy and he would just pull the whole pool with his lats and he would just, is that what you swam short?
Yeah. I was a sprinter. I told my coach, I said, listen, he said at the beginning of the year, every year, hey, everybody's going to swim the 500. Doesn't matter if you're good or bad. I said, I'll false start on purpose. Don't ever put me in that event.
That's a long ways.
Oh, you swim for like, I don't even know, 30 minutes. I don't even remember the time.
No, it's probably closer to like 8.
Yeah, probably.
That's funny. Did you like it? Did you like swimming?
It was honestly probably my best sport athletically.
What else did you play?
I tried baseball. I struck out every time. I swam, I played football, I ran track, and then baseball.
I said baseball already. And was the goal always, I'm doing this in college? Like, was that the dream?
Yeah. So my brother's 4 years older than me. And that, so I looked up to him. He was, you know, that whole idol thing. And he went and played football at Warburg, and he was a 2-time All-American, first team All-American up there. Wow. And I, you know, at 14, I don't know if you guys ever been up to Waverly, but he'd go up, take me up there, get me into Joe's Nighthawk at 14. I just love the atmosphere. So I thought I was going to go to Warburg. Yeah. And then Iowa State called, and then that was a shocker.
Yeah. Iowa State offered you first?
Yeah, Iowa State was my first offer.
And
Dan McCartney. Is it McCartney?
McCartney? Yeah, McCartney.
Yeah.
Let me guess.
He's a good salesman.
The guy he's a sweetheart of a man. He had hands like this.
McCartney's a goat, dude. He's a legend. I'm going to guess, before you tell the next part of the story, that somewhere along the line, like, Reese Morgan popped up at your high school one day, and then you were like an Iowa Hawkeye, or somehow that's how the story goes.
So I got a letter. See, I don't know exact time. I got a letter, and I was going back and forth. I didn't commit right away to Iowa, and I was at the YMCA lifting with my buddy Marcos. That's the guy with the two girls. And he looked at me one day, just randomly. He's like, "Listen, if you're not a Hawkeye, we're no longer fucking friends." straight as face as that. And I was like,
at 18, like 17, 18 years
old. Yeah, 16, 17 years old. However, I was fair enough.
That was what made your decision?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it was, I mean, also a couple weeks before, I was in the linebacker's room at Iowa State, and they were watching film and all this stuff. And they were like, "Promise me the world." And that's just not me. Like, hey, don't promise me the world. Tell me it's going to be hard. Tell me I'm going to have to work for it. Like, you know, don't tell me that I'm going to walk in, I'm going to start playing as a true freshman. I saw through the smoke.
You would hate what they tell the kids nowadays.
I know.
Oh, dude, everybody's a starter day one.
Starter day one, and we got $50K for you.
And we'll pay you.
$2.8 billion.
Yeah, some of that's going to be coming back to –
I think we might get a small chunk of change on that.
That's not small, gentlemen.
Well –
I heard some things around like star ratings and playing time.
Snap counts.
We're getting enough for like an Arby's sandwich or something like that.
Kevin and I might make enough to go to McDonald's twice. Yeah,
exactly.
We
some coupons to Chick-fil-A.
We're going to talk about that the next time we don't have a guest, Kev, because that thing is deep. That goes far deeper than.
That's a rabbit hole of a thing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm not too inversed in it. Like I haven't read so much into it, but here's the thing. When I graduated college, it was inevitable that paying players was going to be a thing at some point.
Yeah.
And to have the NCAA shit the bed so bad on how this rolled out is mind blowing to me. You had 10 years to figure this out.
And that's their problem. Yeah. Is they fought it until the very end until then they just lose everything.
Yeah.
I really don't. With this going down, the whole report from this past weekend of like, okay, well now we're just paying the play. Like we talked to Kev, we talked to Searles a month ago or whatever, mm-hmm. and he's been saying how it's inevitable. Like they're going to pay the players. It's going to be a salary cap ish. Like someone's going to figure it out. It's just like, is the NCAA? Is that office just empty now? They don't have anything to do. I'm not sure what they do.
Well, I mean, they're not going to be doing much more because they're paying out a bunch of this money that's coming from the NCAA. And then like 60% from the NCAA and 40% from the schools.
Do you see what the reason they settled with the 2.8 is because if they didn't, they were potentially going to be liable for like 20?
Yeah, they had a lot more liability.
Holy shit.
You got more than a Chick-fil-A sandwich if that was the case.
We might have. Okay, back to you. So you're seven. When did you do you remember when you committed?
Yeah, I was 17. My junior year. No, I was 16. Right after my junior year in high school.
So you had a full season left, and you had an Iowa and an Iowa State offer.
Yeah, and I had, and then I basically quit recruiting. So Kansas State was calling, Wisconsin, Nebraska, all them things, and I just was like, hey guys, I'm good.
You shut it. You shut it down.
And this was back when Nebraska didn't suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
Good for you.
This would have been 2002. Three?
Yeah, and social media wasn't a thing back then, so I wasn't you know engulfed in the kissing ass the whole time of who Mitch King was or who he wasn't. So I just, hey, I've got a great two offers. I can't go wrong, you know, in my head. So
well, you could have, but
yeah.
Hindsight,
you made the right choice.
Yeah, you don't hear that story very often anymore. I think Aaron Gray, I don't know how much you know about the D-line room right now, but Aaron Graves on the team, I think his recruiting story is similar. Freshman year, I think he got offered freshman year by Iowa and Iowa State. And the minute Iowa offered, he's like, I'm committing to Iowa and nobody else contact me. Like, which is crazy because he would have been a five-star had he kept – like going to the camps and all the shit that they do. And he would have had 15, 20 Division I offers. And like for a kid in high school nowadays to just forego that is a really wild concept, to be honest. It's just really not something you see. So,
yeah. And I don't, what baffles me is like, listen, you can go to Georgia, Alabama, you know, everybody goes to different schools for each other reason, but they leave their home state. And if you are, regardless if you're a first team All-American or a first round draft pick, if you're a good player in your home state, the opportunities once football is done is endless.
Yeah.
Do you walk in a room? If you have a good reputation, it precedes yourself. Your resume speaks for itself. You go into job interviews, you meet people, whatever. Like when you leave the state that you grew up in and play for whatever other school that is, you forego that opportunity when you're done playing football for that advantage. And that's, I don't know how people miss that.
Yeah. It's a long game that I don't think anybody really thinks about.
Yeah.
I mean,
Everybody's going to the NFL after 3 years.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, Kevin's not from Iowa, but even to some extent, I have experienced some of that with the reception of our show and stuff. I never thought or had any plan to have the fan base even know who I was.
Yeah.
Naturally, I'm a loudmouth, cocky. I mean, like, that is my personality, but I basically knew that, like, hey, once I'm become the long snapper and I'm not the linebacker anymore, because I played linebacker as well, and I know you did. I'm curious to hear about the transition to D-line as well. But, like, hometown, Marshalltown, like, now I'm still an hour away in Des Moines. Like, I still feel what you're kind of alluding to there, even, you know, 8 years after our career, which is it's true. Like, you can kind of get that name, image, likeness pull for as long as you want to
on the back end. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to a networking thing, you know, you guys have probably done it. The networking thing with the football team and they kind of did that round table thing.
Yep. That's why I got my current job.
That's how you got your current job?
Not how, but it's why, because I had no idea that my industry existed. And then like half the guys that they brought back do med sales. I'm like, I should probably look into this, but yeah.
and the thing is I think they do better now than maybe when I was in school, and maybe I was just too egotistical to know about it, but like they need to teach you how to network.
Yeah.
They need to teach all these kids how to do a networking class and actually do the follow-up. Hey, Mitch, it was great to meet you yesterday. Let's grab coffee next month. I'd like to pick your brain, whatever that is. Like they need to teach these girls and guys in college how to network, because that is the skill that you take away from being an athlete.
And that's, especially, you can put a money, like you can put a value to that too.
Oh,
like,
easy.
Like you walk out of college, and if you use your network, right, like you're automatically at the top of the resume piles. Just, you know, you still got to interview well. You still got to have the skills and personality traits at whatever companies you're looking for. But just being right there at the top of the pile, just – you know you're probably going to get an interview is huge.
Yeah. Also, using who you know. Hey, you know, one of my good friends and everything like that has I'm doing an interview in a couple of weeks about on a radio for a radio gig. And a girlfriend of mine's like, hey, I used to work for this radio in Chicago and this radio and this radio in St. Louis. If you need to know anybody and go through a cold warm up or whatever, just the networking that you can have to better your skills and everything with it is huge. It's just, yeah.
There's a statistic out there, and I don't know the exact statistic, but you know, online applications to jobs are everything these days, right? But every job posted online gets thousands and thousands of applications that most of these companies, especially small companies, are taking like word of mouth and, you know, like from people they know. It's like, hey, I can get you set up with so-and-so, and this is a good kid. I think he'd be good at your company. And then boom, that's easily gets you through the front door, right?
Yeah. Hey, I know a guy, Grant, he lives in Chicago. He wants, you know, he's looking for jobs. He applied for your job. Just make you have an eye out for his resume.
Exactly.
And we plan on getting Grant a job as for his association with us at some point here. Yeah. Very highly sought after are the former producers from the Washington Walk-ons.
He's still working through his offers right now.
Yeah, he's got a lot of options.
Kluver producer coaching tree is very big.
It's, dude, it's some liken it to that Hayden Fry tree.
Yeah, it gets out there.
So at 17, you commit to the Hawks, but not as a D lineman. You're a 215, 220 pound linebacker.
Sexy guys. Sexy. You should have seen it. I think my first day walking in to an official weigh-in. So the official weigh-in is obviously right before camp. First day of camp or first day of summer is not official yet. I think official, I was like 223 was my first weigh-in.
Lean and
last
lean.
Time I ever. Yeah, first time ever. Last time I ever saw that number.
Haven't been 223 since, huh?
Oh, fuck. No, I'm like a yo-yo.
We could probably. How tall are you? You're not like a skyscraper, are you?
No, I'm 6'2". 6'2".
Roster so 6'3", by the way.
I got corrected the combine for that. You're not 6'2".
Same. So when I got done, I was 6 foot on the roster the whole time. I'm 5'10" on a good day.
That's bullshit, man. They didn't give me a centimeter.
They didn't?
Nah, not a one.
What killed me was my short arms. I'm like T-Rex.
That's tough.
That's tough, man. So, I mean, that had to be tough playing D-line with short arms.
I mean, I sacrifice. I blame my dad for two things, and they're both being short, not height-wise. So, short arms and, you have leverage, right? So – I think on a D line, it's all about violent hands. If you can hit someone, stun them, get off the block, direct them, you know, control that man, it's all about your violent hands. I don't necessarily think it's long arms. It does. I'm not saying it doesn't help, but number one is having violent hands.
I'm sure there's somebody that would argue with you. and I know that there's a guy, the first person that comes to mind when I think of long arms is Anthony Nelson. Dude, Anthony Nelson was so stupid long. Yeah,
have you guys ever met Broderick Benz?
Oh, yeah, we know Brod.
Yeah, Brod was on their coaching staff.
His arms are long.
Yeah. Long. He couldn't, I may butcher this, but he couldn't do hang cleans because the bar, when he bent his knees to snatch, his arms took the bar below his knees and he couldn't snatch it up. It was wild.
Oh my
God. So he was doing hang clean or he was hang cleaning like 135 pounds?
He had to do – I think he had to change out his technique. Doyle did it all. I was – you know, but
– You were just an observer.
Yes.
Were you a hang clean guy, big hang clean guy?
Yeah. I think the most I got was like 360, 375, something like that.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty strong.
I was more explosive than strong. I think
so. You're 6'2". You come in at 223, and you said you were like kind of like lean, sexy machine then. But I mean, I got the picture pulled up right here. I mean, even when you got a little thicker, still looking pretty good. That flow, Mitch. Mm-hmm. Come on now,
dude.
Why? Where'd that go? Bring it back.
I can't. You know. I would love to. I had my boys grow the hair out just because I miss it. but no, that hair was something else. Back in the NIL guys, That would have brought so much money.
Dude, you Head and Shoulders, local barbershop, like
every salon in town, forget about it.
Holy smokes, you could have been doing commercials all day. And I'm serious too.
Hey, now I'm old and washed up.
Who on your team would have been dragging in the most NIL money back in the day, you think? Any of your teammates that you played with?
Not just the good guys, like the guys who are charismatic enough to go and like actually have a brand, like a personal brand, and make funny commercials or stuff like that.
Drew Tate would have been huge back then. Chad Greenway, Abdul Hodge, they could have tag teamed a lot of, sponsorships and all that stuff. Sean Green was very skilled, but he wasn't very outgoing or charismatic. So I think that there would have been a cap to that just because.
Yeah, because there's a limiter on it. Like if you're just elite on the field, but then you get off the field and like you're trying to do a commercial or an advertisement and you're up there like, I like football. I play for the Hawkeyes.
Me big.
I tackle running back.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. Like companies aren't like, or it will work one time. And then no one else is going to see that and be like, oh, we'd love him to do something for our brand. Yeah. You know, like great guy, but just can't do the entertainment side of it. I feel like that wouldn't have been a problem for you. This is the vibe I get.
No, I'm three sheets. I'm crazy all the time. So, no, that wouldn't have been an issue, but I'm trying to think, I mean, there was some really skilled players back when I played, but I'm trying to think of people that could both have a beer with a farmer, you know.
Did you play with Matt Roth?
I did. My freshman year, I played with Matt Roth. He graduated after the LSU game, bowl game, and then that was my true freshman year. So I only played with him one time.
Yeah. So he's someone who's been long requested on the show.
Oh, really?
And obviously he's kind of got a reputation that precedes him. He might have been good on some interesting NIL opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, Matt was the sneaky smart kid, right?
Really?
He knew how to let on. He knew, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure he has CTE today, but
for sure.
Who doesn't?
I think he's one of those sneaky smart guys. Like he knew how to work people, the angles and all that stuff. I think that a lot of it was a gimmick. I'm probably totally wrong on that, but
wow. I mean, maybe.
Well, he's got you fooled enough to at least think that.
Right? Yeah. That's half the battle.
Either way, he's got you questioning it. So your two, was the plan to play linebacker?
Yeah. So I came in and there was Abdul there in the middle linebacker.
Yeah.
And he was Abdul at that point already. So I was battling for a backup position with Mike Klinkenberg.
By the way, at a great time.
What's that?
You came in at some would say the peak of Iowa football. It was unbelievable. Kevin and I, we joined a class that was.
We were the worst recruiting class in KF's tenure.
Yeah, we joined a team that had just gone 4-8 the previous year. I think your first year was.
And that team didn't even offer us either.
Yeah.
And we walked on. We decided to pay our way for that team. You joined a team that had just come off the 2002 and then the 2003 season. And your true freshman year was 2004, correct?
The LSU game, the catch.
You guys were fucking rolling.
Well, the crazy thing was, you look back on it, all the top three running backs were hurt. We are down to Sam Brownlee, which I love Sam Brownlee.
KF used to tell us a story all the time.
Man. Yeah, dude. It was all the defense. The defense was the best defense, in my opinion, one of the better ones ever in Iowa football history.
Even up there with up there. But like, how do you think you guys? Well, I guess you wouldn't have been quite playing on that defense yet. But
yeah,
compared to like these last couple of years with like Jack Campbell, Cooper, guys like that.
There's always going to be the pieces that you can take sure. in and out and interchange or say this guy's better than that. I think just from top to bottom in that, there wasn't a weakness. Like the D-line, I mean, you can go through that D-line was just nasty. And then you've got Chad Greenway, got Abdul Hodge in the second level. And then you've got four-year starters at cornerbacks. I mean, I would say our DBs in that team would have been not as strong as these later years, right?
Was Bob still on the team in 2004 or did he leave in 2003?
He left in 2003, I think, to go to the Colts.
So you didn't get to play with Bob?
Yeah.
In Indy, I did. In Indy. I was playing two ways when I got to Indianapolis. One on D-line and I was playing fullback because they used to still have the same true fullback.
Yeah.
And I remember in camp I did an arrow route, right? Flat route, whatever you want to call it. And the ball, all I heard was just a train. Just train behind me. He's screaming. I think he was doing it on purpose because he was coming downhill and he runs past me and he goes, "Go Hawks." And he just blew like he blew like it felt like somebody blew on your ear. He could have just laid me out. I'd have been done. I'd have probably died.
The old Hawkeye connection is what saved your life.
Yeah, without a question.
Dude, I got scared just listening to you tell how that happened.
Oh, I mean, you're totally exposed, right? You're 1 yard deep. I mean, you look back and everything's exposed. I'd have died.
I just saw a clip of Bob on like 2 days ago on Twitter. I don't think anyone has ever or will ever hit like him again.
He wouldn't be allowed to play today.
No. Have you guys ever met him?
We want to get him on the podcast so bad. I think he only came and talked to us one time during our
senior year. He came back during camp and talked to the team. But yeah, he's a very soft-spoken guy.
The first time I met him, he was wearing a wife beater around in the weight room or whatever. And I was on a recruiting trip, and he walks up to me. I was getting introduced, and from his outside of his shoulder to his ear, just continued to drop. I was like,
"Who is this line from shoulder to ear?"
Yes, I'm like, but he was. I mean, you guys saw pictures. Bob was absolutely shredded, and his traps were.
When you talk about when they say the term built different, I think that it was created because of Bob.
Yeah,
built different, and he was only 5'8".
Tops.
But he just absolutely murdered people. God.
That's mostly mental. I think so. I think you have to have the mentality to be like, hey, there's no holds barred. There's no regard to me getting hurt or, so.
He did. The way he played, he didn't care.
It probably shorted his career a few years, but.
Definitely did.
Damn, it was exciting to watch him when he was playing.
He was the one back when I was playing in the NFL. If you went on IR, so I blame Bob for ruining my career, by the way. When you were in the NFL, you go on IR, you're done for the whole year. Doesn't matter if you couldn't play for 3 weeks or all year, whatever you had. So like Bob, the first quarter of the Houston game, we both made the team and Bob tore his bicep. And they're like, hey, we just got done with the Super Bowl run. We're going to go back again this year. So we're going to keep Bob on the active roster the whole year. And then so you can only have 53 guys on the active roster, but you can only dress 48 or 46.
Want to sign another safety.
So but it was everybody then. Reggie Wayne went down for 3 weeks. Austin Collie went down for 3 weeks. And they kept him on. And now in the NFL, you can go IR for 7 weeks or 7 days or whatever the hell it is.
Five or 6 weeks, I think it is.
Yeah. And I mean, if they would have had that back then, who knows?
There was a trickle down effect. And eventually Mitch gets the call like, hey.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Eventually you get numb. And that's why I shouldn't say quit trying. That's why I retired or quit or whatever. The business aspect of it for me was ruined everything.
Yeah.
I won't name names, but there was a guy that I played with in New Orleans, and he was on the back end of his career. And do you remember the Bounty Gate?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that I was part of that team. And they got all in trouble and saw that stuff. But the D coordinator, why the story, was all about like statistics for your playing time. So like how active are you on every play? How productive are you on every play? How, like, is it a tackle? Is it a breakup? Is it a whatever it is? And so I was, when I got cut for the Saints, I asked Sean Payton, I said, hey, like, why are you cutting me and not so-and-so? Because I was averaging about 26 to 28 plays a game, which is, for a white guy, you know, rotational. I love it, dude.
Yeah,
I was exactly. My nickname was White Boy Mitch, man, or White Lightning. I loved it.
Lightning. I love it.
I was a rotational player. I was happy with it. But when I got cut, I said, hey, why are you cutting me and not so-and-so? And they're like, because you walk out the door, we don't owe you another dollar. So-and-so walks out the door, we still owe him $4 million. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was just kind of tired of it.
Politics get over the football. Yeah. The GM's got to justify getting this guy over this guy. And yeah,
it's all chess, right? Yeah. It's a chess game. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them now that I own a business and I look at structural moves and strategic moves. I get it. It's a business. But it just sucks when you're 23 years old and you're working your tail off and you –
Yeah.
It comes down to dollars and cents.
It's the one thing that we've been told over and over from guys who didn't get to, didn't have to experience that, but also didn't get to experience that.
Yeah.
It's just, everyone's like, yeah, it's just so, there's just this added element of like, it absolutely starts to feel like a workplace. Like it's, and that's, it kills it for a lot of people. Cause it's like, okay, this is not like truly about passion and just having fun anymore.
Yeah. Nobody. I mean, honestly, I don't want to say nobody, but a lot of people, you'd lose, you get blown out. You'd have a winningless season or whatever. And as soon as they walk in the locker room, it was like nothing ever happened. It wasn't.
The check cashed. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Check cashed.
Yeah.
Check cashed. And in some cases, it's hard to blame people too. Like if you're healthy and the check cashes, it's like, I mean, I get it.
I don't fault anybody.
You were in the league for what? You kind of
4 years, close.
Yeah.
I took me a long time not to be bitter. So I didn't watch Iowa football for a while. I didn't go to games. I didn't watch football. Period. For a long time, just bitter. Just bitter at myself, bitter at the situation. But then now that I have boys, I mean, we got season tickets and we go to everything. And it's,
you didn't even, wow, really? Yeah. You were that kind of,
you're angry at the sport, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you get over that?
Let go of my ego. Like who the fuck are you, Mitch? Like nobody owes you anything. Get over it. I was upset. Like I didn't get drafted. Right. My mentality, I was like Big Ten defensive lineman of the year, first team All American, da 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 da, and you don't get drafted. And then I get hurt right out the gate. So I was on IR my rookie year. So it just tanked me a little bit more. And then, you know, when I got cut from the Colts, there was a rookie D lineman there. I mean, he was, if you created a player, that's who you created. 6'4.5", 305 pounds, 8% body fat, just sexy. And then they cut me, right? So you got this chubby little guy walking around. Yeah. So
explosive, explosive and chubby.
Yeah. Yeah. That's from swimming, by the way.
4 years and you were on, you spent time with like five teams, I think I saw on your.
Yeah. I claim. Three, because the other two were I had a cup of coffee.
It's just a passing. Yeah.
Yeah. So my first year in Tennessee, I was on IR, blew my back out, squatting. Had to have a discectomy. That was tough. And then I got cut after that year, went to Indy. That was when Pat Anger got drafted, was that year. So we played together out there, played there most of the year. Got cut. I got picked up by the Rams for, I think, like 8.5 days. And then the Saints picked me up. I played there for 2 years.
You and Pat give me a lot of the same vibes.
Pat and I have got a lot of the same juices, I think.
You guys, are you guys friends?
Yeah, we talk all the time. We talk all the time.
Is he, because he doesn't, oh no, he sells mortgages, doesn't he?
He's a business, I think his new title is he's in business development at a bank, but yeah.
Oh.
I don't know. Couldn't tell you
what. Oh, I'm going to have to give him shit about that one.
Yeah.
Business development.
He golfs, goes to happy hour, and his kids' baseball games. That's his.
Yeah, network. There's no way he's developing business. He's too stupid. He's way too dumb for that. And if you're listening to this and you know him, just like clip it and send it to him, and then he'll get back to me about it.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of you and Pat, there is a little memento passed along in the Iowa football locker room that legend says that you started. Little lion type deal, the heart of the lion. Is that lion. Is it true that you're the one that started that?
Dude, I've been hitting the head quite a bit. I don't know if I exactly started it, but it was around, yeah.
Well, we think that it was your number was the first one that was carved into it.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who gave that to me? Okay, now I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay. Who gave that to me? I don't know. Yes, that was the first person that was given to, and then I gave it to Pat, and I think – I don't remember who he gave it to afterwards.
It's made its way through a pretty significant list of Hawkeyes since
then. Yeah, was Carl Klug – I mean, yeah, it didn't matter.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, Klug might have been on there. Let's see. I think.
Is it still going?
Brett Van Sloten, maybe?
Well, that's the hiccup in the story is we're kind of uncertain what happened to it and who has it and if it is still going. Because I think during COVID, something might have stopped. I don't – what do you know the
– Who did Josie give it to? I forget who Josie gave it to.
They made it all the way to Josie Jewell.
It made it to Josie Jewell.
Yep. Josie had it during our time.
From I think during our time, James Morris had it.
Probably.
Right?
James had it, yeah.
Then was it Sloat or was it Mark? And then Josie got it.
Mark eventually had it and then Josie.
Okay. And I forget who Josie gave it to.
I don't we'll have to get an update on that. But it is, yeah. I think
Josie probably still has it.
No. I don't think Josie does. I don't think Josie does. Josie, and if he did, he probably lost it because he ain't good with that stuff. Except for earning stuff like that, he's pretty good at earning awards.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing. Do you remember anything about that, Mitch? Like what the story was on it?
I think it was given to me, and I couldn't tell you
for hitting people in the head the hardest or something like that.
Yeah, something.
Do you worry about CT?
Oh, if I got tested, like my brain dissected and stuff, I'm sure I have CTE.
But do you worry about it? Are you worried about like drooling in your pot of cereal one morning when you wake up? Or
I haven't forgotten anything. I do drool already, but that doesn't stop me from.
You were probably drooling when you were playing too. So.
No, here's the thing. I tell people ask me, will I let my sons play football? Right. And I think I correlate it to this question is I've benefited more from football than I ever will it taken away from me.
Yeah.
So fast forward 20 years. Yes. I have to be put in a home or put down out back. It is what it is. So I've lived 50 some years, a great life from football. So,
Mitch Ole Yeller King.
Leaving instructions for your sons. Just dig a hole out back.
A few rats, poison pellets in my soup, and we're good.
Bury me under the wrestling room.
Yeah. We got a pond. Shit. We got a pond out back. Just throw me in there with some weights.
Yeah. So that's a good point, though. Like to look at it as, okay, take away football, and now where's, you know, what is my life?
What way is Mitch King without football?
Yeah.
I joke about it all the time. If I would have went to Iowa and did not played football, there's no way I would have graduated college. Absolutely not.
Distractions or just didn't care?
All my friends went there to the university. So, like, you know, Mitch, we're going to Dollar You Call, the sports column. We're going to FAC at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're, you know, there's sand volleyball down the street. Come on. And I'm like, I'm going to Learning Center until midnight, you know, or 10 p.m.
The Learning Center. Oh, the Learning Center.
Yeah.
That makes you want to puke.
Oh, I don't know if you guys were there yet. We used to be able to sign in twice and it would double clock us. So like I'd sign in and then 15 minutes later, I'd go to the bathroom and I'd sign in again. So that whole time I was in turn 1 hour into 2 hours or 2 hours into four.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if they fixed that bug or if that information just never made its way to us.
I think they caught on. But
son of a bit. We
got a good 6 months out of it for sure.
We could have used that, man, because those 8 hours every week freshman year were.
Oh, you'd wake up at what, 5:30 to go to work out, and then you go class all morning, and then you've got spring ball, and then after spring ball, you have to go to Learning Center. So you're up from 5 to 10 o'clock every night or later. Wrap.
And you guys didn't even have you guys.
I mean, we're like over 10 years away from it. Our freshman year was 2013. 11 years ago now. But I don't know if I've ever had a harder calendar year in my life, freshman year.
I almost quit. I literally almost quit. Yeah.
Seriously, like you thought about
adapting the schedule, the workload, and I think it's all been downhill since then.
You mean easier?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
You're just talking in your life, Kev, or just?
In general, I mean, I remember, like, you know, taking classes, trying to adjust to being an adult, being responsible for yourself, and the workload of football classes, study hours, all that bullshit, signing in for the 18 things you have to do every single day. I think that was the hardest year of my life.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, Mitch, that you say you wouldn't have graduated college. All those
not
things.
University of Iowa. That's for
not
sure.
At Iowa.
Yeah. I would have had to have gone somewhere else.
You could name 10 guys right now. Me and Kevin could name probably 30 guys right now that still didn't get it. They didn't get it through their head. They didn't, they got distracted. Like those things got them in some way or other.
Yeah.
So what was it about those things, or who were you being accountable to, or who did you feel responsible to that kept you like, fuck, I hate this, but I have to do it. Like, I'm not going to let those things derail me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I work hard and I play hard, but my mentality is that, like, when I walk, I've had this mentality when I walk into a room, I want my reputation to truly precede myself. Right. Somebody knows that I work hard, that I'll never give up, that, you know, what I say, I mean it. If I tell you I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. You tell me to be on at 7, I'll be on at 7 or 6:58. Like, that's my reputation, and it's not going to falter. So I think long windedly to answer your question, I was never going to let anything derail me. I was never going to do that. I think what sets people apart is that they truly don't have something that matters. They may be skilled at football, but football doesn't matter to them. The life lessons they learn from football doesn't matter to them personally, right? So they allow things to get in their way. Football meant, and the life lessons I was learning in real time meant everything. Drinking or whatever didn't matter as much to that. So that it was never going to be an option for me.
It's the first time I've heard that described in a way that I actually relate with. Because sometimes that's hard to answer. Like you look at one guy versus another and you're like, what went wrong here versus here? And because otherwise it looks like two very similar, you know, 18-year-old kids. And yeah, that makes sense. I think I just valued what the coaches could give you as a player and as a young man so much. And I respected so much the guys who had made it to senior year and were going to graduate and how people looked at them. I think that was huge.
Yeah.
And the idea of being, I guess, who I am now, like, oh, you went and you played 5 years for Iowa football. You did it. You accomplished it. That was such a thing for me that, like, it was never not going to happen. So I, yeah.
Yeah. If I ask you, you don't need to tell me, but if I ask you, could you think of three things that you were told or learned for playing football at the University of Iowa that you would teach your daughter or your sons?
30.
Yeah. 300. Right. Like three would be like, I could fall asleep saying three.
Yeah. That's a huge part of it too. Now that I'm going to turn 30 years old.
Be where you're supposed to be there. That's where KF starts every fall camp with. This is first rule. Is be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there.
Yeah. I say this all the time in my life and being around, you know, kids and all that stuff, nieces and nephews. I wish the good coaches did it. I wish all the middle of the road coaches would tell you the life lesson you just learned from that action. Hey, you were late to practice today. Did you run? Yes. But you're going to either lose a job or you're going to do this later in life if you're consistently late. Mm-hmm. Hey, you've fumbled the ball 12 times, right? There's always going to be an excuse, but your teammates are going to look at you as unaccountable. So they're not going to bring you in. They're not going to bring you in on work jobs. They're not going to bring you in on projects. And you've got to look and teach every life lesson. So I wish the good coaches did. Right. Mm-hmm. I can tell you who they are. I just wish in most athletics that big 20-80% of the coaches would teach that, because you learn more, in my opinion, about from sports than life ever.
That's interesting, because I think when you don't tell a player or an athlete why there was a consequence or what lesson you're learning in a certain situation, it leaves their mind up to a lot of their own interpretation of that.
He's just being hard on me. He doesn't like me. He's being a dick.
I'm getting singled out. I'm not getting fair treatment. We talked a lot about, there's a lot of that stuff that went on with the Doyle stuff in 2020. And again, for anybody listening, I recognize that there was other stuff that was legitimate too, but there was a lot of that from a lot of our teammates on, they just thought that they were getting unfair treatment or they were getting singled out for, there was just a personal dislike. There was a personal vendetta against them.
And I don't listen. I will never be a person to tell you how you feel about a situation. So I can't speak for them and what they received or what they felt. That's not my position. But what I would tell them if they were my friend or my son is, where did you learn from this? Good, bad, and ugly. What did you learn from this situation right now? So let's teach how you're going to get better in life, whether you're a husband, a friend, or a businessman or a coworker. Like, what did we learn? Yeah. Don't just self-loathe from it. Learn from it.
Yeah, because if you don't, then it's just worthless. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
You said you almost quit. Like, you legitimately sat there in the LC like thinking, fuck, I got to talk to coach. I'm going to tell him I'm hanging it up.
So that spring is when I switched to D-line.
Okay. So after the freshman season.
Correct.
Okay.
So that was really, that was after spring ball through that, was tough. You went through the season, your first season's a blur, right? Hey, this is what I'm here for. Boom. Then after the season, you get into the winter program and all this stuff, and it becomes dark super early. And then you get right into spring ball and you're waking up as a true freshman at 5 a.m., coming home to the dorms at 10 p.m. And then spring hit and I switched to D-line. And I was super depressed about it. And then all of a sudden the weather got nice and I'd coming home from class at 1:30, going to walk out of the door at 2 o'clock to go to spring ball meetings. And there's a sand volleyball with 30 people, 20 girls in bikinis and this, that, and the third. And I've got 8 hours left in my day, right? And I was just like, man, this is not what college is supposed to be like. So, yeah, I had a rough time that spring switching from D-line. The schedule and the grind caught a hold of me. Yeah, there was a lot of negative thoughts.
How'd you get through it?
Yeah.
Did you just kind of grit your teeth and get through it, or is there
My brother. I called my brother. I was like, dude, what am I doing? Why? Because he played D-line. He was, like I said, he was a – 2-time All-American at Warburg, D-line. What do I do? Blah, blah. And he just reminded me, like, we got a tattoo on our chest, or I do anyways. And it was a quote he gave me before I went to college. And it was, you give what you give, for what you don't give is lost forever. This day will never come again. Right. And I take that into every situation. Like, hey, you're the only person that can say, I gave it my all. You have to put your head on your pillow at night. You have to tell your wife and kids that you worked your tail off to earn the mortgage that day or whatever it may be. You're the only one that can say, could I have worked harder? And that's the mentality that I try to walk into. And that's what he reminded me. He's like, hey, quit being a pussy.
Sometimes that's all. Yeah.
Sometimes that's really all it comes down to, right? It's just like,
it's facts.
Cowboy the fuck up. it's not that hard. You can do this. There's a lot of people who have been through a lot tougher shit in their lives.
Without a question.
It's tough when you walk by that sand volleyball court, though.
It is. You guys weren't at Hillcrest, were you?
Oh, yeah.
That new dorm was built by then?
No,
we were in the process.
We were third to last freshman class to go through Hillcrest.
Oh, Hillcrest was the shit, dude. I got so many memories from Hillcrest. Oh, yeah. It's just, oh my God.
Oh, yeah. I get like some of my fondest memories were in
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. And we don't have to, I know exactly what your memories are.
Yeah. Just use your imagination.
Drake and I was roommates with Drake, the guy that I talked about. And we considered like staying another year. You had the option to stay. Once you left the dorms, you couldn't come back. But if you stayed in the dorms for your sophomore year, you could continue to live there. And Drake
I stayed two years.
Yeah. So like Drake and I legitimately were like, should we do another year in Hillcrest? Like we thought about it.
Yeah.
I bet the sophomore run back in Hillcrest would be even better.
Telling you, man.
We had one of the handicap rooms. I shouldn't say this probably on this podcast. We had one of the handicap rooms that had the shower and the shitter in the room.
What?
Yeah, we had an en suite in our room. It was the
You don't know about peeing in the sink then?
Oh yeah, I did.
Oh, so you still peed in the sink even though you had a shitter in the room?
Well, my first year. That was my second year. We had the suite.
Anybody who's ever been to Hillcrest knows you just got to piss.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. But he woke up. He was on my team. He woke up in the middle of the night and some girl was squatting down on top of his sink. Obviously, he didn't live with the girl in the dorm.
Unfortunately.
I've been in that situation as well, too.
Yeah. That's it's funny how the stories are all the same.
Yeah. Did you guys ever fill the trash cans up and lean them against the doors because they open in? Filled the trash can with water, knock on somebody's door.
No, never did that.
We did that every day. Every day.
Every day?
Oh, yeah.
Were they always teammates or just random people?
I mean, everybody in the hallways that we knew, they weren't always teammates.
Yeah. That's awesome.
We used to steal bananas from the we used to take the bananas from the treatment center, whatever, the food center, and let them rot on our windowsill. And then we'd open our dorm doors and we'd throw it against other people's doors so there'd be rotten bananas smashed against all of them.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. When did it finally start to feel like you transitioned to D-line? And like, do you remember? Yeah. Do you remember a moment when you're like, maybe I belong, like maybe I can get this done?
My freshman year, the first game I started was against Nick Mangold. I mean, if you guys know that name, he was the first round. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He tossed me every way, but the right way.
That was your welcome to college football moment?
Yeah, it was awful. But by the end of that season, my freshman year, we went up to Wisconsin for Barry Alvarez's last game. And I was the Big Ten player of the week that week. And it was awesome. Every time I put my hands on a guy, I could tell where the ball was going just by his body language and his tilt and his pressure. Getting off the ball, we were making plays, and we beat him. It was like first time I've heard jump around. It was just awesome. And I was like, hey, I think I belong on this stage, right? I think I can make it work. So
is that one of your fonder memories? Like, what are some of your?
It was like a storybook. It was like a 2:30 or 3:30 game going into dusk, started misting, and then they started playing jump around. I'm on the 50-yard line jumping around, pumping the crowd up. It was
was that to win the Big Ten championship that game?
Was that the Big Ten championship? No, the next week was.
And that would have been 2005?
04, right?
Yes, 2005.
Yeah. Man. You played 4 years, and by the time you were a senior, obviously you really had I understand what I'm doing though. And to the extent of like, I'm a first team All-American.
Yeah.
Was that like a goal, or did that just, you just kind of nose down, head down, and then all of a sudden you look up in senior year, like, I've made a lot of progress here. This is where I'm at.
My freshman year, I made freshman All-American. And when that hit, I just remember thinking, hey, now Chad Greenway came up to me and I was sitting in my locker and he goes, and he had just made first team All-American, right? So I was freshman All-American. I'm down here and he's a first team All-American. And he basically said, hey, don't get a fucking ego. And hey, come talk to me when you're a first team All-American, not a freshman All-American. Yes, he was kind of a dick about it. I love Chad, but it lit a fire in my ass that I wasn't going to be content just by having a little bit of a success my first year.
I love that. Yeah. We had Chad on too, on the pod. He's awesome.
He's a great man.
Yeah. And we need his daughter. We need his daughter to come out.
I think we'll get all their daughters. All of them are going to be 5-star athletes.
We need it. We need them all. We need them all in the black and gold. His daughter's scored like 48,000 points and she's going into just her junior year in high school.
14.
Yeah. Crazy. Grant, pop in here. We don't want to take up too much of this man's time. This is when I let Grant finally speak. He asked a couple questions and then
I'm excited to hear it,
Grant. Yeah. So when I looked up Mitch King football on YouTube, there's a video that had a speech of yours in it from the 2009 Outback Bowl. I'm curious, like, the context of you're talking about, like, Hawkeye pride and stuff. What was this speech improvised, one, or did you know you were going to give it? And what's kind of like the backstory to this?
So, I mean, you guys obviously know Ference. He's like, hey, we're a team tracksuit guy, or we're dressed up for team meetings. You go to a bowl game, and the first day you have where both teams come together. It's like, for that, but Outback Bowl sponsored it. Outback Steakhouse sponsored it. Just a media day with both teams, blah, blah. So we're wearing the Hawkeye tracksuit. We're sitting down, and then South Carolina walks in, and it looked like they pulled 120 dudes off the street. And I'm not saying in any – just none of them matched. None of them looked like a team. It was literally, hey, let's go to the mall, pick up 120 dudes, and bring them to a luncheon. It was just not professional, in my opinion. And then, bowl week, you run into the guys and you're razzing and whatever. And then that's where it all started. That was the backstory of it. And I was proud to be a Hawkeye. I'm like, listen, we're representing you guys, blah, blah, blah. But to answer your other question, that was not improvised. Gary Dolphin got me all shook up and hot to bother right before I got on there. And then I just kind of took a turn.
Gary Dolphin, awesome guy. We've had him on the podcast a few times. He's looking for a partner, and he said he wants a defensive player from the KF era. Can we throw your name?
I think Mitch threw his name in the hat on Twitter.
Did you?
Yeah, so I don't know if I can say this. Hopefully don't get me fired before I'm hired. I got a second round interview next week for it.
Hey, let's go.
Well, good luck.
Do you know who you're interviewing against? Any other names out there that you want to leak?
No, I'm not going to leak anybody. I know at least one other guy for 100% certain. Yeah.
We won't.
You can put him in the chat just for our eyes. And then we can say an anonymous source.
We can ask him in a second here.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to take up too much.
If I got that, I'm pretty excited. Like, I haven't had something that filled a passion cup like this could be for me for a long time. So I'm really excited for this.
That would be sick. That would be, and that would be one heck of a gig. That would be something. It'll be interesting to hear as just a consumer of the product. Gary was somebody else. So it's going to be.
Yeah. So this next round, we're doing a simulated broadcast. So we're going to sit in front of a TV with pull up one of the games from last year and kind of just go back and forth in front of a TV. So
that's cool, man.
I've got
to
study
the game. Do you get to do a little homework, or are they going to give you a random game?
I don't know yet. They said they probably will let me know the game. So they haven't yet.
Cool. Well, we appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
I appreciate it. I've been a fan from afar. My wife goes, so they think you're washed up? What's the name of the podcast? Why are you washed up?
No. Like, well,
I am washed up. That's for damn sure.
We've had some very, very not washed up people on this podcast. So
we are the ones that are washed up, although we try to stay athletic around here. But yeah, we try to bring the
good. Is that your full time job? I know you know you're doing the social media,
so
coaching and all that stuff.
Yeah, so for me, Kevin, like you said, does med sales, and Grant just does all this for free, and just we work him to the bone. For me, this is, we'll call it almost 50% of like,
oh, really?
How I make money. So
that's awesome.
It's really cool. We never had the idea that it would. I didn't even understand or have. When we started this, it was like we were just pissed that we didn't play anymore, and we wanted to talk to each other once a week, and about Iowa football. And we were like, "Hey, maybe fans would listen to this because we kind of know a lot about Iowa football." And they did listen to it, and it got big enough to the point where it's like, you know, then you have guys like you who own businesses who want to run sponsorships or ads, and people want merchandise and all this other stuff. So,
and big enough to the point where people started getting upset at some of the things we say.
So. Yeah. Yeah, we ruffle feathers now and again on the online. So, and now we that was, I mean, in this September it'll be 6 years that we've been doing it. So
freaking insane.
That's nuts.
You've carved out a niche for yourself, guys. I think it's going well.
I think it's gonna
obviously what kind of business it is. I'm just a fan, but yeah,
you should be going on. Always trying to increase the business side of things. But it only happens because people like you answer their messages and say, yeah, sure, I'll come talk to you for an hour. So we appreciate you obliging them.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Got me all excited again. Shit, I get to talk about Iowa.
You get to talk about Hillcrest. That'll get you excited any day.
I bet Hillcrest gets brought up in my friend group once a month. Maybe once every other month in a conversation or just something. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Memories. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, for everybody listening out there, I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will be back again next week, hopefully with another guest. I got to keep finding guests for the summer here in the dry season before the season rolls around. Hope you enjoyed, Mitch. We'll talk to you guys next time. Till then, peace.
Gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.